This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
What's up, Chicago? I'm Erin Allen, and this is The Rundown. There is something so special about talking to somebody who truly embodies the place that you live in. So much so that it makes you proud to be there, just because they're also there and representing so thoroughly. That's what it feels like seeing the work of Chicago artist Don't Fret. I feel like I'm literally in conversation with him when I'm looking at his art, particularly because it depicts the unique but notable mundanity of everyday life in the Windy City. But also because it has actual thought bubbles. The characters he paints are stand-ins for everyday Chicagoans with his interpretation of their inner musings. A man walking down the street with his partner thinking, so this is what my life has become? Or life is about living in the moment, and this moment calls for $35 in Chinese delivery. Don't Fret mostly creates visual art using wheat paste and paint. If you haven't seen any of his work around the city, I bet you'll notice it after this interview. But he's also a comedian, a muralist, a sculptor, and a writer. Last year, he self-published his fifth book, This Is No Quiet City. It's his first book, though, of images that has poems and vignettes in it as well. The book has dark humor, political commentary, a foreword from poet Kevin Koval. I mean, it's just so Chicago. I talked to Don't Fret in August last year over Zoom. He remained anonymous, so I didn't see his face. But we got into his philosophy behind making public art and why the winter is actually Chicago's superpower. Don't Fret, welcome to The Rundown.
Hello.
So we're just calling you by your moniker, Don't Fret. Talk about why you go by an alias.
In the beginning of my career, it was sort of personally and professionally, just out of necessity. Professionally, obviously, I didn't want to get caught doing tagging. I hesitate to say I was ever a graffiti writer. I don't think I ever was. But then, like, personally, I just kind of felt like that part of my life needed to be separated. And so that's kind of what the origin of Don't Fret was.
So you were, would you say street artist?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really like terms.
Okay.
I mean, I was a kid. I grew up in Chicago. I started doing graffiti around probably 12 years old. I realized very quickly that I sucked at what you would consider traditional graffiti, but I loved it and I loved the energy of the street. And I was just kind of like searching for my own voice, I guess, for lack of a better word. And then I grew up in Wicker Park, and there were a lot of art school students that were still living in the neighborhood because it was affordable. And I would see these guys that were doing graffiti, but they were just kind of writing their name just like in their handwriting with like no style whatsoever. And that like hit me like a bomb. I was just like, oh, I can just be me, you know? And like lack of aesthetic becomes aesthetic.
Wow.
And so, yeah, that's kind of where I started.
So as a person who's been in the street doing your art with the lack of aesthetic as aesthetic, you have made public spaces your canvas. And I'm also a visual artist, but I learned, you know, pretty quickly, as most of us do as kids, you know, draw on a piece of paper, not the wall, most definitely not somebody else's wall. Can you put into words your inclination to do the opposite? What was it about the face of a tamale cart or the wall on Lower Wacker that got you excited?
Well, I live by sort of the ethos when putting up work, especially with the characters. I think a piece needs to either completely feel realistic within the space, or it needs to be completely absurd within the space. I feel like my work, the characters, like, physically aren't challenging, but I find it's funny that people find them challenging because their placement in the street is unauthorized.
Ah.
And so, you know, even if it's like a little kid holding balloons, it's still challenging because it's unauthorized. And I've always found that interesting. Especially, you know, when we live in a society where, I mean, what was it, a couple years ago, KFC filled in the potholes and put ads in the potholes or something.
What? I didn't know about this.
Yeah, that happened. But, I mean, you know, what does that say? You know, when, like, that is perfectly acceptable, but, you know, public art is a scary topic.
Yeah.
And sanctioned public art is even a scarier topic.
Do you feel like there's a line to be drawn between what is fine as far as public art and what is not?
You know, there's a Monty Python quote from a sketch. It says, I don't know art, but I know what I like. And I think that that's the predicament we find ourselves in right now, is sort of maybe the opposite of that statement, is just that there's so much red tape to get anything approved that almost nothing happens. And in terms of sanctioned work, it's almost near impossible to have a political opinion on anything. Even that portrait of Michelle Obama, it's just, where is that? That's like Milwaukee and Kinsey. Like, even that, I heard there was so much drama about getting that done. And we've kind of entered a new generation where there are, like, a lot of, I'm not going to say street artists, I'm going to say muralists, that, you know, they've never really done graffiti, they've never really done illegal work, and that's fine. It's just interesting to me when I talk to, like, some of the younger guys and girls, because they're just, like, hustling, like, talking to, you know, whoever they can about trying to get a wall. And I just always say to them, you know, why don't you just take the wall? I mean, I've lived the majority of my adult life professionally saying, better to ask for forgiveness than permission.
I love that phrase. I live my life that way a lot. Not all the time. I definitely follow the rules, you know, when it's absolutely necessary. But
yeah, well, I'm not sneaking coke into Qatar or something, you know?
Oh, my God. Okay, so your work has these characters in it, your visual work. And I'm looking at the scenes and I'm like, yes, this looks like Chicago. I've seen that person. I've seen that street. I've seen that storefront. I can imagine someone having these thoughts. Are they from your own brain, the things that these folks are thinking or saying? Or are they actually things that you hear people say? Is it a mixture of both?
I would say 90% is all me.
Okay.
I can't think of a specific instance, but yeah, there have been a couple times where, you know, you just hear somebody talking at a restaurant and, or just like passing on the street, and like that one sentence, like without knowing the context of what they're talking about, is just like, whoa, what's going on? And I mean,
yes.
And I mean, visually, I love these moments too. I mean, I was walking down North Avenue one day and I saw a guy running down the street with like six boxes of lettuce, like sprinting. And I was like, all right, what happened to get you to there?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I'm always kind of eyes open, I guess.
Is it from that curiosity that you kind of pull these threads out? Like, I wonder what this guy is saying. Let me say what he's saying. Let me say what I
think.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know if I'm an anthropologist per se, but I mean, I love talking to people. I love meeting people. Mm. I love witnessing life go down. I think people are hilarious and absurd and like wonderful and horrible all at the same time. And at the very least, entertaining for sure.
You get into some of those intersections in the book, This Is No Quiet City. And I wonder if you can read a little bit from that pure, raw, messy, true, and terrifying. I would love to hear you read what you wrote about those intersections.
Sure. I have seen men and women walk to work every day through downtown to claim their chance to be a part of it all, to earn their paycheck, and nothing else, earn their dignity, their chance to remain, and the additional honor of being a taxpayer. After all of that, you get to rise up and call yourself a Chicagoan. I know a city filled to the brim with guts and gumption, a city who won't let any man alive tell them what they can't do, not even a Trump. Our democracy is as unique as our thoughts on the matter. Go for a bike ride down LaSalle Street and ponder it all. Pass all those dead presidents. Could they even imagined a place like this? I've seen a city take on tyranny and dictatorship while simultaneously endorsing it, but our version. Migs Field was just a dream, a phantasm, a statement piece. I've seen a city land a spaceship on a field that was meant to honor our soldiers. Further proof that whether you're an architect or a kicker, anyone can botch a job. Our skyline is as malleable as that team that will always let you down and yet always entice your love. The luxury isn't a condo. It's a DIY punk spot that doesn't exist anymore. The framework is still here, though, and it always will be, because it's home. Because you know here. Because you know heartbreak. How couldn't you? You're a Chicagoan. Your eyes and heart are wide open, and that is pure, raw, messy, true, and terrifying.
Thank you for reading that.
Yeah,
the writing is where the humor really comes through for me when I'm in this book, and I think it's such a, you know, it's refreshing. You know, you're reading the thoughts, you're pondering, you're kind of sometimes in this existential place when you're looking at the imagery, and then you read the text and you're like, oh, it's still me thinking about being in Chicago, but now I'm laughing out loud. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Yeah. So this is your fifth self-published book. You're self-distributing it. Why do you choose to go that route, putting it out this way?
Part of it is just I tend to have a pretty DIY ethos, and I find, you know, I have had one book properly published, and I was very thankful for that. But it's just a very different process, and frankly, it's a long one. And I, you know, most of these stories I've written over the last 2 to 3 years. But I was feeling very like this is the moment to put this in the world. And, you know, I think it's important to just kind of do what you want to do. You know, if you want to write a song, go write a song. If you want to write a book, go write a book. But I don't want to wait around for administration. So, yeah. You know, right now we're totally independent, just basically selling books through my Instagram and my web store, and it's going really well. So
there's a piece in here that I really love. It's called Laugh with Nature. And I wrote, as I was reading, I wrote the words resilience and I wrote clapback. And
clap back.
I wonder, clap back.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I just wanted to see if you could riff on how you see Chicago kind of laughing at the things that get thrown at it and bouncing back regardless.
All right. Well, let me put it this way. I think it's really funny. So, you know, Aaron Rodgers, Packers quarterback, was dating Olivia Munn, and now John Mulaney is married to Olivia Munn. So, John Mulaney is a Chicago boy. So,
okay,
it's like, yeah,
okay.
But I mean, you know, I don't know. That's not the greatest example, but I just think it's so funny.
Uh huh.
I always say the greatest thing that ever happened to this city is the fire and winter.
Mm.
And, you know, I believe that because the fire allowed us to reinvent ourselves. And winter is sort of the yearly test that defines us.
Mm.
And those that are ready to stick around. And there's a lot of tough cities, but, you know, we are a tough people. And I think that comes from, you know, the stockyards. It comes from inclusion and immigration, diversity and eclecticity. And even like a month ago, I was at the bar and these two guys were like buying everyone in the bar drinks, and they were Ukrainian refugees that had just arrived. And they were just like so happy to be, you know, they had found Ukrainian village in Chicago. They had found, you know, basically the motherland, as you know, or the second motherland, excuse me. And I was talking to them through like a Google Translator or whatever.
Okay.
And it was just incredible hearing their story, and they're just so tough and so resilient, and like, you know, I was like, you're part of the Chicago story now too, my friends, you know. As are the refugees coming from Central America.
Yeah. The work is never done. You've got more to go, more of it that you even wanted to put in here. Tell me about what's coming up.
You know, definitely more Chicago stories. I'm sort of thinking about writing and illustrating a book of tongue twisters from around the world.
Okay. That's exciting.
Yeah, I mean, I know it sounds a little whatever, but yeah, I'm very interested in language.
Don't Fret is the alias for this Chicago-based artist born and bred. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
You can find This Is No Quiet City on Don't Fret's Instagram. That's at Don't Fret Art, DONTFRET. Now, we reached out to Don't Fret to ask if he had any upcoming shows, and he said his uncle, Jerry Lewandowski, is signing copies of This Is No Quiet City at the MCA on the night of June 11th. Apparently, Kevin Colville will also be there. You can pick up a signed copy there as well. We'll put a link to that event in the show notes. And that's it for today. Justin Bull, Sarah Stark, and I produce The Rundown. Ariel Van Cleve edits the show. Brendan Banaszak is our executive producer. Dave Miska was the engineer for this episode. Special thanks to Natalie Moore for editing today's republish of this episode. The Rundown is produced by WBEZ Chicago and is a part of the NPR network. Our theme music is by Louis Weeks. I'm Erin Allen. Thank you so much for listening. I'll talk to you tomorrow.